Okay. Father God, you bless us in so many ways. Surely these Thursday morning gatherings are one such blessing. Please send your spirit to each of us so that we might receive from today's time together whatever it is that you have in store for us. Well, good morning, everyone. As Judith said, this is our seventh session of our series on the Celtic spiritual tradition. This week, we are reflecting on chapter 6 of John Philip Mill's book, Sacred Earth, Sacred Soul. Chapter 6 looks at the life and work of John Muir and his vision of nature as a sacred gift to be cherished and cared for. And as we've done so often in the past, we've asked our friend, Father Jim Clark, to help us delve more deeply into these ideas and to help us to formulate what our response should be. You saw a brief introduction, a bio of Father Jim on the invitation for today's session. And so without further ado, we want to welcome Father Jim to this morning's podium. And we'd like to give you our blessing this morning. Christine, please lead us in a blessing for Father Jim.
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you with joy.
Thank you, Christine. Father Jim, it's yours.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Thank you very much. Good morning. Greetings to this wonderful technological community. Great to be with you. I'd like to begin with what I think is a very appropriate poem by Mary Oliver. She's often referred to in the poetic world as a creation mystic, a woman who experienced not only the depth of her faith, but was able to me, at least, to bridge both what we might call the religious boundaries, open them up, as well as the experience of the vastness of nature and its many wonders in a very specific and particular area of where she lived. This poem is called Why I Wake Early, Why I Wake Early by Mary Oliver. Hello, sun in my face. Hello, you who make the morning and spread it over the fields and into the faces of the tulips and the nodding morning glories, and into the windows of even the miserable and the crotchety. Best preacher that ever was, dear star that just happens to be where you are in the universe, to keep us from ever darkness, to ease us with warm touching, to hold us in the grand lights, grand hands of light. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Watch now how I start this day in happiness and kindness. Why I Wake Early, Mary Oliver. Well, once again, I think you hit a home run. This is an awesome book by John Philip Newell. Just very apropos for this time in so many, many ways. For me personally, I don't believe in coincidence, but the chapter you've asked me to reflect on about John Muir and his wonderful insights, it just so happens that two of my brothers and I are in conversation about hiking the John Muir Trail beginning next year, as all three of us will be retired, and we decided let's do something adventurous to connect with nature, and so we're very excited about that. So the gift of this chapter within this wonderful, insightful book that John Philip Newell has pulled together, I think, is very insightful for our time, and let me explain why. I'll begin with a quote from C.S. Lewis. He said, God's wild, you know, and perhaps that's why contemporary humankind, especially in Western civilization, were so afraid of God, and therefore afraid of God's creation, because it's wild. At some level, no matter how hard we try, we can't seem to control either the creator or creation. And I believe that's a good thing, because it reminds us that we are to receive it as a mysterious gift. Many theologians today are speaking about creation as the body of God, as the body of God. What might this mean for us? Well, first off, it deeply affirms the sacredness, not only the earth, but the cosmos in general. Theologians today accept the fact that this is called the first incarnation of God's ever-present love. St. Bonaventure went on to expand on that. He said there are three aspects, three incarnational revelations that the Creator has given us. One is creation. Secondly, is the Word of God. And third, is the Christ. Each one of them are meant to be a deeper and deeper experience of the revelation of God's intimacy. The fourth one, as we have since discovered in this last century, is the presence of the Spirit that dwells not only in us, but in all of creation. So this great theological insight is given a poetic thrust or insight by John Muir, as he calls it the pulsing or the throbbing of the divine presence in the midst of creation. No wonder he was drawn to it. In Dr. Belden Lane's wonderful book called The Fierce Landscape, he speaks about that every human being is deeply formed by the land in which they are born, by the land in which they are born. Certainly that would explain a lot about John Muir. Born in Scotland, in the wildness of Scotland and what that means, and to breathe in, to take in the mixture of what Scotland stands for. Those of us who've had the privilege to travel to Scotland know what this means. It's recognizing in some beautiful way that as we reflect on John Muir's not only insights, but his life experience, that nature continues to unfold its innate wisdom and generosity in particular and in universal themes. He made it a point of really unpacking this for us in the way he lived his life, is that he followed what many of us would call the Spirit, guiding him, for example, from Scotland to the US, guiding him from a citified life to a country life and into the wilderness. On so many aspects, we see that something is happening with this man. And it's true of all of us that when we listen to that Spirit within us, invariably it reaches out and touches others and how they experience the Spirit. Did you notice or did you read that during this pandemic that literally thousands and thousands of Americans took it upon themselves to adopt different animals? I think that's a powerful expression of what John Muir is talking about. In other words, when people begin to isolate, confine themselves in their own homes, they realize something was missing. Now, maybe it wasn't conscious, maybe it was subconscious, but isn't it interesting that they decided to get an animal. At some level, yes, we could say a tame expression of nature, but nevertheless, an animal to be able not just to babysit them, but to bring some type of surprising energy, maybe to help us to connect with our own creative nature. But be that as it may, it certainly has helped some of us, perhaps all of us here, to relearn or to re-experience with the native peoples, the First Nation peoples already know. That is, that the Creator dwells in the midst of creation. And for those that have the eyes, the heart, the ears to pay attention, we will see that. What would have happened if, as a Western civilization, we would have done what these peoples have done for hundreds and thousands of years? And that is to study, reflect, and pray with and through creation. What if we would have taken as much time and energy that we have done to study the Bible, the written word of God, and done that with creation? That how is the Creator speaking to us? How is the Creator speaking to us? If you remember when Pope John Paul II came to visit the United States in one of his many pilgrimages, he had the opportunity to meet with some of the Native Americans, especially in Phoenix. He was traveling with one of the chiefs, a particular tribe, and the Pope said to him, and I quote, "You know, we have the same belief about creation." And the chief wisely didn't back down and says, "Oh, Then the chief asked him a very important question. Do you believe that the Creator is present equally in all of creation? And John Paul II had to admit, no, we don't. And he said, well, we don't believe the same. You see, that's the key of understanding and perhaps listening better to our native peoples. They recognize that this Creator does not hold back the expression what we call love. That love is given out in such a generous portion to all of creation. And why we are invited to make it a point of listening carefully of how is that same Creator speaking to us, that portion that's been given to us. So John Muir, in his life story, makes a point of illustrating surprising unfolding of the mystery of our lives. So we call this the incarnational story of God revealing God's self through this one particular man. Now, hopefully, we're not going to fall into the trap that many people can and just deify this man in such a way that we say, well, that's him. That's never going to happen to me. What we see in another person, what we experience, how we make it a point of connecting with that other person, is an invitation for us also to go deep inside us and discover that same spirit, that same awareness of what is going on. So John, as you know, was brought up in a very strict Christian perspective of life. But as he was faithful to that spirit and allowed it to be unpacked through the story of the unfolding, the mystery of his own incarnation, gradually his faith became deepened and expanded where he outgrew the strict limitations of his way of understanding the Creator and understanding the Christian faith. This is why we are called to be enthused, as John was. It's where the word enthusiasm comes from. It means to be filled with God, to be filled with God. When we stop connecting with the natural inborn enthusiasm of the Creator inside us, our life becomes boring. We become depressed. We become disconnected from the wildness of God within us. We become disconnected from the nature of our own human personhood. And truly is a tragedy. We move away from thriving as human beings, as sentient beings, to living our life in survival mode. How sad. So to be filled with God means that, like God, we are ever creating, we are ever healing, we are ever inspiring. That's the makeup of the Godhead from the Christian perspective. To recognize this, we begin to see that there's an amazing, marvelous connection between all that is. So you may wonder, where in the world am I getting all this stuff? Well, if we dig deeper, we see that it's buried in the theology of Christianity and in many other religions as well. So let me give you an example. We speak about the fact that God's Spirit has been given to all of creation. Well, the native peoples knew this way before Christianity came upon them. The way they worded it is, it's called all my relations. I remember the first time I made my first vision quest and experience a sweat lodge. And before you go in a sweat lodge in Lakota tradition, you're literally on your hands and knees to crawl inside the sweat lodge. And you say, welcome all my relations. I had no idea what that meant, to be honest with you, until after the whole ceremony. But what it meant was that I and all of us partaking in this ceremony, we're entering a whole another experience. The sweat lodge is meant to be a symbolic expression of the womb of the earth, the womb of the cosmos, the womb of the maternal mother, the great mother. All my relations speaks to not only coolness of the earth and the handmade igloo, but also the brother stones, the brother fire, believing that these were alive with the divine presence. And so to say all my relations is a native way of saying that everything belongs and that we are to respect the more than human world and how that it speaks. John Muir discovered this. It awakened him. To coin a phrase from the 60s, it blew his mind. It blew his mind and opened his heart in a deepening, ever-present way that he could only dream of. So creation is alive, alive in ways that are beyond our imagination, why poets like Mary Oliver, songwriters, people in love, animals, all of creation speak to us in a way that's like, wow. And why so often, especially as Westerners, we come into the presence of creation, our minds are blown. And we come away with smile or a deep sense of reverence or quiet and a wondering of, what was that? Was that real? You know, perhaps you've heard of a new phenomenon that came out of Japan. It's called forest bathing. It's where you go to a forest, just allow yourself quietly to walk through the forest very slowly, and allow yourself to bathe in the gift, beauty, the presence of the Creator through nature, that forest. I've had this opportunity many times. I didn't use the language of forest bathing, but reflecting on it, I realized exactly what I was doing. I remember one time I was hiking in a forest in Australia, Queensland, and it was profound. Walking through the forest in complete silence, I felt the Creator. I knew the Creator was there. It was breathtaking. It was the type of thing I felt like if I would have spoken, I would have been blaspheming the Creator, only because it was the wonder and the awe and the beauty and the sense of the divine presence was so overwhelming. And I just soaked it in. I was a different person when I walked out of the forest. Or another time, I was traveling with my youngest brother, David, and we decided to go on a small boat to go out in the ocean to experience some of the great shark whells. And remember, he's the youngest, so he's 18 years my junior. And it just happened to be a very, very rainy, wet, cold day. And I decided I wanted to stay warm. So I went inside the cabin of the boat, and there's my youngest brother out on the deck of the boat, just ecstatic with the wildness of nature. Thank God, and thank my brother. He came and he said, come on, Jim, you got to come out. He said, David, it's cold. I went out there. He goes, yeah, but it's great, man. You got to come out. I said, okay. So I came out, and I caught his enthusiasm. Notice the word, I caught his enthusiasm. It was wild. The boats going every which way were holding on, but the wind and the noise, and watching whales. We finally came inside. I was stunned. I had been enveloped by awe and wonder. Nature was saying, with a measured amount of protection, you could enjoy the lesson, the learning, the transformation that nature can offer. And isn't that what we say religion is supposed to do for us? To transform us? To draw us more deeply to the mystery of what the love of the Creator is all about? Yes, of course. That's what John Muir experienced. And that's why it not only enamored him, and thankfully, he wrote down his reflections, but he could not stop talking about it because he knew and experienced his humanity in a completely different way. And he wasn't about to keep it quiet because he wanted others to experience it. So this is why the native peoples speak about and encourage us to have conversations with the wilderness. St. Augustine, who was no slouch in a theological said that when he looked into the face of a dandelion, he thought saw enough material there for 1,000 sermons. What if you were to expand your understanding of having a conversation, wildness of nature, by remembering, you know, admit it, you talk to your pets. It's just taking another step. Why not talk to the flowers, to the grass, to the tree? Have a conversation with the parts of nature that grab you or scare you or invite you. To recognize this brings us back to something very important and very deep within any religious tradition, and that is mysticism. Mysticism is a word that's not meant to scare us. It's just a word that's meant to describe an experience of the divine. Creation mysticism, mysticism of prayer, sacramental mysticism. You can put any other word you want in front of it, but mysticism is nothing more than the experience of the divine presence, and it's mysterious. You can't create it. It's all about being present to what is. It comes to you in the most surprising ways, in a moment of silence, in an intimate conversation, in noticing just the way the light bounces off the mirror, the voice of your beloved, the look of innocence on your grandchild. So to recognize this powerful effect is a priceless gift. To put it into practice, oh my gosh, it's what we were created for. Many years ago, when I was a young man, I fulfilled an adolescent dream of mine and spent 5 weeks in the Alaskan wilderness up above the Arctic Circle. And during those 5 weeks, I was backpacking and kayaking with an outdoor group called National Outdoor Leadership School. It was a powerful, transformative experience. But I'll never forget, as a young Catholic priest, quote, people ask me, what did you do for Mass? I said, what do you mean, what did I do for Mass? My God, creation. It was like Teilhard de Chardin, you know, the creation became the altar. But anyways, be that as it may, we finished those 5 weeks, it happened to be on a Sunday. And one of the other guys happened to be a practicing Catholic as well. And the small plane landed on the tarmac in Kotzebue. We asked the pilot, is there a Catholic church around? And he said, yeah, right across there, across the tarmac. So we went running across a small tarmac. We got there near the end of Mass. It was just at the sign of peace. And I remember standing in the back, because we hadn't had a shower for 5 weeks, standing in the back and being enveloped by the love of God. And what struck me is the presence of the Creator that we had been experiencing for 5 weeks was no different than the experience of the love and presence of God's people in the small church. So here's the challenge for us as Westerners, to do what John Philip Newell is inviting us through all these many stories, and that is to let go of a dualistic approach to life. It's not, you know, I think I'm going to just let go of all this religious stuff and just relate to nature. No, it's both. Is it God's truth, God's life, God's spirit, God's love, God's presence? It's not limited. It's always and everywhere present to us. And we are asked to be able to open our hearts, our lives to this great mystery in such a way that it can be truly liberating for us and for others. You know the songs we all learned in the 60s about you can't keep love in. It's true. You can't control the spirit, the creator. You can choose to turn your face away from it. You can shut your life down in such a way that you're not willing to experience the wildness of God, to allow yourself to be filled with that enthusiastic presence. Yes, you can do that, but it's to your loss, and it's to our loss. Because love, when it's real, is meant to flow. It's an energetic force meant to flow and to touch, to reach out. That's why we wake early. That's why we pray. That's why we gather together. That's why we don't give up in this work, because we recognize there's always more. There's always more. So as you remember, John Philip Newell speaks about three main insights that come from John Muir's work that have major implications for us, especially for this time in human history. First implication is that the source of hope is all around us. The source of hope is in nature. The lessons are there. I'm not just talking about the Amazon forest. I'm talking about the little expressions of nature as well. Your front yard, your potted plant, your pet animals, the animals in zoos, is that you know as I do that even when you weed your garden, nature will have its way, those weeds are going to come back. So often we forget the lessons, the universal lessons that can be experienced in the particular reality of what's right before us. So that source of hope with the natural world, what does it say to us in regards to our differences? To our differences. Yes, it's true that a whole field of poppies is so beautiful. Absolutely. Think of Montano de Oro years ago. Mountain of gold. All these beautiful orange California poppies. But take a look at the hills, Los Padres National Forest above Santa Barbara, those of you who live there. And notice the wonderful sides, not only beautiful poppies in the spring, mixed with so many lupins, wonderful wild white and yellow daisies. And you realize it's a different type of beauty. Nature reminds us that, sure, there's a time we can experience where maybe we all look alike, or talk the same language, or we have the same values. But part of God's beauty and experience is saying, yes, that's good. And so is this. And so is this. And so is this. So that's an example of how learning the lessons of nature can help us to accept the reality. What does it mean to be human beings together? Second implication is allowing the wilderness to fully awaken us to the rhythm of reality, the rhythm of reality. Dr. Bill Plotkin, a Harvard-educated psychologist who became converted to becoming what he calls an environmental psychologist, founded an institute that he calls the Anima Institute. He's written 4 books, very high introvert and intuitive man. But in his great wisdom and experience, he's learned that as Westerners, we need to learn the language of the more than human world if we're going to survive in this time in history. That's a pretty powerful statement coming from such a well-educated man and a well-skilled man. And so the purpose of his institute is to help us Westerners learn how not only to learn the language of the more than human world, but how to regularly communicate in such a way that can enhance our life and help the entire planet. What is another way that we can fully awaken to the rhythms of reality? Well, as you know, the discovery of artificial light is still fairly recent in human history. But how many of us are allowing our own technological tools and toys to control our life? I'll give you 2 examples. One is the use of light. And what we're discovering is how it's affecting our interior life. I'm not sure if you realize, but when we leave our computers on in our bedrooms or the blue light of clocks, digital clocks, et cetera, it has an effect upon the depth of our sleep and the brain waves. Okay. Secondly is how regularly it is, not just for the younger generation, but also for us, that we take our phone everywhere. Just this morning, I was at the gym working out. There's one young gentleman who sat on the same machine for 15 minutes. And in between every 5 or 6 lifts, he would just stare at his phone and play with it. So you may say, well, there's nothing wrong with that. Well, at one level, yes. But he was missing the gift of being in a community of people who are working out. Not listening to music. They probably not even listen to his body because he's on the same machine. Didn't go to any other machine. So the rhythm of nature in terms of time, space, people, beauty, and yes, tragedy, tsunamis, earthquakes, storms, things we can't control. These are the type of things that can wake us up, drone into your life. That when you feel out of sorts, why not choose an image from nature? You know, I feel like I'm caught in a storm, an emotional storm. Or I feel like I'm out of control, or I have no control in the midst of this pandemic. It feels like the whole earth is shaking and it won't stop. As we begin to take a look at our language, those metaphors and symbols can speak to a depth of our own connectedness to all of nature and reality. And that's why as we notice the phrases that John Philip Newell chose from Chimera's writings, they speak of a depth of connection that he makes not only with his own humanity, but nature as well. And finally, another implication that Newell points out is that we're invited to get in touch with the wildness of the divine within each one of us. What would that look like for you? I know for me, the big challenge for me is learning how to trust life, to trust the Creator, and not just in general, but in very specific reality. In other words, a relationship, a struggle, and to trust that we are being grasped, we are being held, we are being embraced by love, a love that we see incarnated in nature around us. I remember a powerful story about two parents who had an adult daughter who had been struggling with drug addiction for many years. And she'd been in and out of different centers that promised that they'd be able to help her to alleviate the addiction or help her end it, but no such luck. They'd been to the emergency room several times during these escapades. And finally, one time, the daughter was rushed to the hospital and with a drug overdose. And husband and wife are sitting next to each other, holding hands, praying that God would heal the daughter. Then a nurse was sent out by one of the attending emergency doctors to tell the parents, it doesn't look good. Your daughter's blood pressure is extremely low. Vital signs do not look good at all. Just came out to prepare you for the worst. When the nurse left, the husband turned to his wife and said, honey, you know as well as I do, we've done everything. Everything. Cheerfully, she nodded. He said, I think it's time for us to finally just let go. Maybe this is her choice. She doesn't want this life. Sure seems like it. Maybe she needs to die. I don't know. But can we, are you willing to pray and ask God to receive our daughter? She said, yes. So they joined hands and they said, Father, in your hands, we commend our daughter. But if she lives or dies, from now on, it's up to you. We've done everything we can. She's in your hands. 5 minutes later, the same nurse came out shaking her head and said, Dr. Morgan sent me out to tell you, surprising thing just happened. Your daughter's vital signs returned to normal, her breathing is steady, and her blood pressure is back to normal. So the good news is that when she came out of that particular struggle with her life and death, this time she chose a place where she was going to go to try to end her addiction. Finally, it stuck. Thankfully, she's alive and she's living a happy life. So is it too much to say that this is an example of how we can learn about the wildness of God? That God dares us, if you will, or invites us, whatever word you like to use, to come to the edge of a cliff, a canyon, the edge of our life to finally say, are you willing to trust me and give your all, or give this relationship, give this situation to me? Watch and see what happens. Why? Because everything is connected. Everything belongs together. St. Julian of Norwich calls this the oneing of the Creator. Is that God's desire is that we see and experience, yes, it's all connected. As you well know in the Gospel of John, this was Jesus' final prayer, prayer for unity. You might discover this oneing of God. This ever-present gift. So creation is seen as a mirror both for our inner world and our outer world. T.G. Jung said that the reason we can see so much out there is because it's a reflection of what's in here, vice versa. Is that our dream world, our non-rational world, uses all these different symbols, expressions, divine mystery inside to wake us up to the depth of meaning. What does it mean to be a sentient being? What does it mean to live this life? What does it mean to be able to be invited into the significance of it? What does it mean to be a woman, to be a man, the 21st century? So what we do has significance, not just in this moment, in this space, not just the person that you live with, but has significance to everything else. Two examples of this are the coincidences in your life, synchronistic events. These two aspects remind us that there's a presence that's within us and around us. And that you experience this presence either protecting you, guiding you, loving you, leading you, helping you to deal with tragedy, struggle, whatever it may be. I don't know if you ever played the game Jenga. Jenga, a child's game made up of wooden blocks. They are rectangular blocks, and they're all stacked up, builds a wooden tower. And then you pick teams, and the goal of the game is you start pulling out individual blocks and to try and leave the Jenga tower standing. And you keep pulling out the blocks until eventually the tower falls. And hopefully it doesn't fall on you. It's a great game to practice not only balance, but for us, I believe, to notice that everything is connected. And when you start removing things or you start replacing things, it affects the entire building. It affects the entire structure. So what you say and do has tremendous meaning and significance, not just in the eyes of the creator, but in the depths of who you are. Because you know as I do, when you're not seeking to grow and you're caught up in your desire just in security, something begins to shut down inside of you. That wildness of God begins to become muted. That enthusiasm for life becomes dissipated. And you wonder why, as I've heard so many older people so sadly say, I just want to die. Just heard it 2 days ago. I just want to die. We would not say that if we were connected with the inner divine nature that all of us have. So here are some of my own responses as I've read this chapter and have been reading along with you. I've chosen four of them, and I think they summarize, certainly for me, and I hope for you, what we can learn from John Muir's experience. First off, an invitation. To make it a point, in whatever way you're drawn to regularly connect with nature on its own terms. Regularly connect with nature on its own terms. So for those of you who are afraid to walk in the rain, grab your umbrella, put on your rain clothes and jackets, and get out there and just do a short walk. Just feel wildness of rain. Or maybe it means going to the beach, going to a local park, or just sitting in your yard and just noticing what's happening, the life in your own backyard. But regularly connect with nature. One of the ways that I do it is that at least once a week on my day off, I make it a point of either getting involved in a landscaping project, going on a hike, or jogging at the local park, which is a regional park with two lakes, lots of ducks and geese. And I know it sounds strange, but I talk to them. And just a way of being able to say, not like St. Francis of Assisi, they're not my flock, just to remind myself we're all connected. Secondly, to embrace and learn from all aspects of your humanity. All aspects, not just the good things that you like, but the painful, the difficult things that you have been struggling with maybe for decades. The parts of you that, you know, maybe you haven't wanted to think about. Why is it, for example, we don't want to know anything about our body until something really hurts, something's gone wrong? For the first time ever, I had a couple of places on my face burned off because of a pre-cancer condition. Thankfully, I have a good dermatologist where he spent the time to teach me what's really going on here. And I was fascinated by it because you see, the divine presence is not only in the universal, but the particular realities. And it's one reason in the Catholic tradition, we're asked to meditate on the Sacred Heart of Jesus. It's not just the Sacred Heart, it's the Sacred Liver too, the Sacred Pancreas, the Sacred Foot, the Sacred Nose. Is that all of you is holy? And yet we don't do that until we're really hurting. So my brother Daniel is recovering from a full knee replacement. My sister Mary Lou is recovering from a hand surgery of rheumatoid arthritis. What a great invitation for them to reflect upon, not just what is God saying through that, but how the knee works, how the hand works, the mystery of the creator, one's own body. Third, to accept the bigger questions of life. The bigger questions of life. I'm always challenged by the fact that as I read the gospel, I notice that Jesus rarely answered people's questions. It's as if he was just kind of listening and being bemused by the whole thing. But he asked people many more questions than they asked him, 224 to be exact. Because questions are for us adults. They're meant to stir what's inside us. So can we accept rather than fight or need to fight answers all the time and just accept the questions that come up within you? Think back to when you were a little child and how many questions you peppered your parents with. You didn't necessarily want the answer because as soon as they gave you one answer, you asked another question. It's the whole idea of wanting to be engaged in a conversation with God. That God's creation, you, us, all aspects of creation are filled with numerous questions. And so listen to them. We use them as means, as bridges to be able to connect a broader experience of what is. And finally, the fourth response is to remember something that John Muir said so beautifully. Earth has no sorrows that earth cannot heal. What this means in plain English is healing is found within us. It's found within nature. God has given us everything we need, and why we need not fear the journey. We need not fear our shortcomings, our struggles, nor that of nature, because when we look long enough and hard enough, under even the dark, dismal places of our interior life or of nature, we'll find new life. I know I've shared this story with many of you before, but I want to repeat it as my closing story. When I entered midlife, I was looking for a means to help me to be able to address my own issues that were coming up. And so I decided to make a vision quest. It was an 8-day vision quest that involved a dream interpretation workshops guided by two Jungian analysts, and also being immersed in nature, as well as being in the outdoors. It was a powerful experience. But when I was in my sacred space, what struck me so powerfully wasn't until the very end of my time in nature. That was, I could not see all the deadness. All I saw, all I wanted to see was a beautiful green forest. The green trees, the bushes, all of it. You see, when I was out in the wilderness, it rained for 36 hours. I had emptied my boots 4 times of water, set a record in that area of Canada. But you know, God got the last laugh. Because like I said, after about 30 hours, I finally realized why I couldn't see. I didn't want to see. I didn't want to see the dead leaves, the dead trees, none of it. I just wanted to see the beauty. That was my message, that underneath the deadness was life, because nothing new happens without death. Nothing new and beautiful grows without death. No new life comes unless we're willing to let go, unless we're willing to embrace the loss. My friends, that's the core message of Christianity. And here, I missed it completely to the very end. And so healing came to me in the midst of the area I didn't want to look. But when I finally did, I experienced the transformation I needed, the wisdom I needed to find my way through midlife into the last stage of my life. It also be that for you. So we're going to break into the breakout rooms now, and Tim has the 2 questions that I'd like to invite you to work with. When we come back, I'd be happy to entertain any questions you have or comments or need for clarification.
Thanks, Jim. Would you like to read those questions to send us off?
Sure.
They're in the chat there if you need them.
Okay, gotcha. First question is, what does it mean for you to allow the wilderness to fully awaken you to reality in general? What does it mean for you to allow the wilderness to fully awaken you to reality? And secondly, what does it mean for you to touch the wildness of God within you? What does it mean for you to touch the wildness of God within you? Okay, we'll see you in a few minutes.
Thanks.
Thank you, Tim.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, a little invitation will pop up here for you all shortly. Feel free to accept it. Remember, you'll be in a room randomly assigned with no less than 3, no more than 5. And if you find yourself jumping into a room with just 1 or 2 folks, I will move you pretty quickly over to a bigger room for you. So the questions are in the chat. You've got them there. Father Jim just read them, and we will come back around 11:15. So looking forward to seeing you all very soon.